Narayanam namaskrityam. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Reading today from Canto 5, text number 14, verses 34 and 35. I'll just read the first verse, and then we can chant the word for word for the second. Kvavich chitavatad yane kadaivika bhotikami yanam dukanam pratinivarane kalpo durantavishaya vishanaste. Translation for text 34. The conditioned soul suffers many miserable bodily conditions, such as being affected by severe cold and strong winds. He also suffers due to the activities of other living beings and due to natural disturbances. When he is unable to counteract them and has to remain in a miserable condition, he naturally becomes very morose because he wants to enjoy material facilities. Please repeat the words for the second text, which is text number 35. Translation. Sometimes conditioned souls exchange money, but in due course of time, enmity arises because of cheating. Although there may be a tiny profit, the conditioned souls cease to be friends and become enemies. Translation. Sometimes conditioned souls exchange money, but in as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Verse 8, Punkshakshriya mituni bhava meitam, tayomito hridaya granti mahu, ato griha shetra sutapta vitayar, janasya moho yam ahang mameti. The monkey-like conditioned soul first becomes attached to sex, and when intercourse actually takes place, he becomes more attached. He then requires some material comforts, apartment, house, food, friends, wealth, and so on. In order to acquire these things, he has to cheat others, and this creates enmity, even amongst the most intimate friends. Sometimes this enmity is created between the conditioned soul and the father or the spiritual master. Unless one is firmly fixed in the regulative principles, one may perform mischievous acts, even if one is a member of the Krishna consciousness movement. We therefore advise our disciples to strictly follow the regulative principles. Otherwise, the most important movement for the upliftment of humanity will be hampered due to dissension amongst its members. Those who are serious about pushing forward the Krishna consciousness movement should remember this and strictly follow the regulative principles so that their minds will not be disturbed. We continue our journey through the forest of material enjoyment, meeting various animals, and also eating three fruits in particular, Adiatmika, Adidaivika, and Adibhautika, as mentioned in the first verse here. If we look back over the last year, we're now in October, the year is kind of beginning to draw to a close. We can see there have been many calamities. Just before the beginning of the year, we had the tsunami. which I believe affected even some parts of, some parts of India. Adi Daivika. There's nothing you can do. Of course, they're talking about some kind of defense system, or at least a warning system. But that wave was big. So when we talk about the waves of material energy, that was a big wave, a very tragic occurrence. Later on in London, we had the bombing on the 7th of July. That was due to other living entities, a strange kind of living entity, not exactly human, though having probably two legs before they were blown off. The terrorist, other living beings. Recently, we had the earthquake, I think, in Kashmir. I don't know, my wife just arrived. She told me 50,000 people. 50,000 people, yeah, so many. It's hard to comprehend the scale of the suffering. Again, Adi Bhautika. Is it? Daivika, sorry, the demigods, yes. Adi Daivika. Actually, all of them involved, when these happen, we very often, I don't know about you, but I imagine what it's like to be in that situation with a tsunami coming towards us or whatever. It's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that the true yogi is one who sees the equality of all living beings, both in their happiness and their distress. Therefore, it's natural when we hear of such disasters to imagine what was it like for those people who were there. But anyway, all of them have some connect. All of them, to some degree, are to do with the mind and the body. So this material world is a place of suffering because we have a body. I think it was the poet W.B. Yeats, an Irish poet, who described us as chained to a dying animal, referring to the body, chained to a dying animal. That's a fact. It's interesting, if we analyze, the body seems to be, perhaps those who are materialists relish the body as a source of pleasure, but if we analyze very carefully, we'll find that the body is able to provide us a lot more suffering than it is than pleasure. In fact, even as we sit here now, if we meditate on the body, we're sure to find some kind of ache in our knees or our back or whatever. That's the nature of this body. But somehow we're looking for happiness. But actually, it provides that. It's dukkha yonia. Sense gratification is actually, because we get the body by sense gratification, that sense gratification which provides the body is a source of suffering. I remember some years ago, I have some problem with my eyes. You may notice I have at least two pairs of glasses. That when I got my first pair of glasses, I was walking in the manor, and one devotee said to me, "Rasa Mandala, those are a wonderful looking pair of glasses." And immediately I felt some pride. Ah, very nice. And then I thought, just a couple of seconds later, what is this feeling pride? I've actually got some problem with my eyes, but I'm thinking, this is very nice. And talking of disease, I had the fortunate opportunity to get a checkup at the Bhaktivedanta Hospital the other day, a very nice hospital. And I was considering before going, what can be the good result from this? What are they going to tell me? So there's some trepidation. Practically all they could tell us is there's no disease. That was it. Not exactly a good result. Of course, at the end, and this illustrates how devotees have a different vision, I asked my consultant, Dwarkadish, So I was joking. I said, "Doctor, how long am I going to live?" He says, "It's all right. You're eternal." So a devotee sees differently. So it put a nice slant on my own trepidation and my thinking. But the fact is, The body is a source of suffering. And we know that, for example, we've mentioned the elephant of death. We know, all of us, deep down, that death is going to come. Paschanapi na paschiti, we see the ancestors have passed away and their parents have passed away. And we know, if we have children, that they will also pass away and their children will... We see again and again and again, but paschanapi na paschiti, somehow we don't see. We choose not to look at that problem. We'd rather ignore it and not see it. As Woody Allen once said, to try and reassure us, don't worry, no one gets out of here alive. We can meditate on that. So one of the problems is certainly death. That is hanging over us like the sword of Damocles, hanging over us at every moment, actually. Even those who are great controllers in this world, because we want Ishvarohang, this conditioned soul, particularly of demonic mentality, thinks I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. And we read here that he becomes morose when he can't control. So even great kings have actually failed to actually control this material energy and hence enjoy. Srila Prabhupada mentions the case of one great English king. He calls him a celebrated English king, using the term celebrated a little sarcastically, perhaps. So there is a poem here. Now King Canute on palanquin forbade the sea, do not come in. But time and tide for no man wait, soaking feet for a king so great. So there are many examples of king, or those who think that I'm a king, an Ishvara, but somehow or other they cannot control time and tide. There are many other examples. I don't know if you're familiar with English history, but there's William the Conqueror. That's how our history begins. But he was conquered by death. So many examples are there of kings who've fallen. There's an interesting poem here which talks about the inevitability of death. I'll read some of it. Srila Prabhupada quotes Darwin a little earlier on and says that Darwin was right that we're descendants of monkeys. He said he was right in that respect. So Srila Prabhupada used to see the truth wherever it was expressed, whether it was in the Vedic scriptures or not. He would be able to have that Shastu Chakshus. He'd see truth wherever it was. And Srila Prabhupada explains we should accept truth wherever we find it. Of course, we have particular reverence for our own scriptures. That's our tradition. But Srila Prabhupada, that truth may be found in other scriptures and even outside it. So this explains something about kings and royalty. The glories of our blood and state are shadows, not substantial things. There is no armor against fate. Death lays his icy hand on kings. Scepter and crown must tumble down and in the dust be equal made with the poor, crooked scythe and spade. So the scythe represents the common people, the scythe and the spade. But the scepter and the crown, which the king holds his scepter and he has a crown, they must tumble down in due course of time, because death is inevitable as soon as we get a body. Actually, interesting, in this poem, even though it's written by an Englishman, James Shirley, the final line is interesting. I'll read that to you. Actually, I'll read the final verse, if I may. There's three. The garlands wither on your brow. They boast no more your mighty deeds. Upon death's purple altar now, see where the victim bleeds. Your head must come to the cold tomb. Only the actions of the just smell sweet and blossom in the dust. A reference to karma. The actions of the just will smell sweet and blossom in the dust. So Srila Prabhupada writes that many poets have written, have lamented the effects of time, which we all experience as soon as we get a body. And of course, in the Bhagavatam, there's that wonderful verse, Aihu Hariti Vaipung Sang Udyan Astam Chayan Ausau Tasyarte Yat Shino Nita Uttama Shloka Vataya. By both the rising and setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes his time by discussing the topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. Of course, there are those who've tried to cheat time and death. Somehow, they think they can cheat that. I was speaking with one devotee explaining about how Walt Disney had great vision. But actually, there is a story, I think it's true, that Walt Disney had his body frozen with the idea that when we find a cure for disease, or his particular disease, we can wake him up. Of course, he's probably already passed to his new body, probably become a duck or a mouse. The famous example is Hiranyakashipu tried to trick Lord Brahma. He asked Lord Brahma, make me immortal. Lord Brahma says, I'm not immortal. How can I make you immortal? I can't give you something I don't have. So he thought, I'll trick Lord Brahma. So he said, don't let me be killed during the day or the night, on land, on sea, or in the air, by any weapon, by any demigod or any mortal, or any beast or human being. And of course, a very interesting story of how the Lord appeared and actually killed Hiranyakashipu, and yet actually fulfilled the promise of his devotee, Lord Brahma. So Krishna's tricky, we know. When someone tried to trick Srila Prabhupada, and he asked him, one gentleman, Hindu gentleman, can Krishna create a hill so big that Krishna cannot lift it? See the trick of the question. Difficult question. So Srila Prabhupada answered equally trickily, yes, of course, and then he will lift it. So again, there's that attempt to trick Krishna, to somehow trick death, but death will not be tricked. There's a story also of how death is inevitable, that there was one gentleman, a businessman, living in Baghdad. Of course, now Baghdad is devastated, but previously it was a center of a great civilization, Baghdad. So that gentleman sent his servant to the marketplace, as normal, to buy some boga. So as the servant was there in the marketplace, he was going around the alleyways, he walked around a corner, and he came face to face with death personified. And death personified made a movement towards him. And he was terrified. He immediately took to his heels and ran all the way back to the mansion and fell at the feet of his master and said, let me get out of here. Death is after me. He made some movement towards me. He's after me. Let me get out of here immediately. So the master was kind to his servant. He says, okay, take the best horse and you go to the town of Samara. So he galloped all the way to Samara, a good distance away. So the master, he wasn't a very rich man. He didn't have many servants. He decided to go down to the marketplace himself. He also met face to face with death, personified. But he had a little more courage. He was more of a hero. It's interesting that Julius Caesar, he said, cowards die many times. heroes only once. So he was more of a hero. So he was not afraid of death. Rather, he began to admonish him, to rebuke him. Why did you do this to my servant? Now you've scared him. He's ridden to Samaria. I've got to come and buy the boga. Why did you make that move towards him and scare him? And death personifies it. I didn't make a move towards him. I simply jumped in surprise. He said, well, why did you jump in surprise? He's just a servant coming to buy boga. He said, I jumped in surprise because I was astounded to see him here in Baghdad, because I have an appointment with him tonight in Samaria. So, ride as quick as you can. Death will catch up with us. So that's one of the sufferings. As soon as we get this body, we suffer. Actually, it's interesting that when we arrive here, at least for this chapter of life, at least I've never heard of this happening. I've never heard of babies laughing when they arrive. Right? When a baby arrives, I've never heard as yet of a baby laughing, saying, okay, I'm here, great. Rather, Shakespeare has written in Macbeth, when we are born, we cry that we have come to this stage of fools. He likens the world to a stage, but all the actors here are fools. So this is our condition. As soon as we get a body, immediately this problem. I remember seeing on Sankirtan one T-shirt that I liked very much. I was distributing books, and one non-devotee had a T-shirt, which I thought was maybe a little similar to our own philosophy. It simply had four words on it: birth, school, work, death. And that was his summary of life. Birth, school, work, death. Somewhat skeptical or cynical. But that is the nature. Of course, on Sankirtan, we were brahmacharis. We had just, like the brahmacharis here, we just had a small... Actually, we didn't have a locker in those days. We had one small 20-inch suitcase. That's all we had. We could go at a moment's notice anywhere. Of course, later on, I bought a 22-inch suitcase, and then a 24-inch suitcase, which shows I was destined for the Grihastha ashram. but anyway, that is the principle. But what's mentioned here is there's some problem, and particularly the human form of life, and more specific, is meant for self-realization. Specifically, the male form in particular is meant for that. But there is a problem, because there is difference between the male and female. The male generally isn't so attached to home and hearth. Not so bothered. Sometimes the wife may complain, you're spending all your time in the office. Not so attached to home and hearth. But particularly the fairer sex, the ladies, they're more interested in those things, having a home, society, friendship. But the male generally, he has that problem, he's attached to sex. Mentioned here, the monkey, he's attached to sex, particularly those who are monkey. That's the problem. The problem is a lot more focused. We mentioned how actually scientists have done research between males and females. Females have much better peripheral vision. They can see at the extremities much better, or see the whole picture. Men have much better on that focused vision. So there are differences. So the ladies generally, they have that wider attachment to the world. But the man, the male, he has that problem. Therefore, he gets married. And then, does that solve his problems? That itching, as Srila Prabhupada calls it. Just like when we have an itch, we scratch it. And it gets worse. We regret it. So sometimes, those who are materialists, they try to actually satisfy that itch. And then, it's mentioned here, progressively, it gets worse. Rather than actually solving our problem, it gets worse. Srila Prabhupada explains... Actually, there's a nice story. You know the story? The yogi who had just one piece of cloth. So he was meditating on the side of the river. But when he washed his cloth, it was wet, so he was uncomfortable. So he decided, okay, I will. We've all got experience, I guess, of actually somehow being misled by the material energy. We just do one thing wrong, and somehow one thing leads to another. I think we all have experience. So he decided, okay, let me get a second piece of cloth. So he was very happy. He could meditate peacefully with no irritation because he was sitting with his dry cloth and the wet cloth was drying in the sun. But then a mouse came and chewed a hole in his piece of cloth as he was meditating. So what to do? He decided, okay, I will buy a cat to keep away the rat. So he went to the market, bought a cat. The cat would stay there. The rat wouldn't come. No holes in the cloth. He could wear his cloth very peacefully. But then, of course, the cat started to meow. So he was performing his meditation, and this meow mantra was disturbing him. So he decides, okay, he was intelligent through introspective knowledge. He could understand the cat needs some milk. Where to get milk? No milkman in those days. He went to buy a cow. So he was very happy. He'd got a cow to give milk to the cat, so the cat would keep away the rat, which wouldn't chew the cloth, so he could wear it very nicely. And then the cow began, so again, he understood, the cow needs milking. I don't want to spend all this time milking. I've done this to save time. So he went to the market, made some arrangement, and got a wife. Of course, the story goes that earlier on, he'd met a sadhu who told him, be very careful of these things. Just tolerate. So some years later, the sadhu came by, and he got 3 kids, house, mortgage, 3 mobile phones. His computer had just broken down. Got a virus. And the sadhu said, just see. Better to just tolerate, if we can. So this is the nature. Srila Prabhupada writes, we're interested in society, friendship, and love, but what are they? It's in this verse, it's mentioned about cheating. So Srila Prabhupada alludes to this. Those in the garb, or the dress, of friends and relatives merely plunder the hard-earned money of the bewildered soul. Everyone is affectionate towards his wife and attached to her. But what is this wife? This is speaking about Grihamedas. We're not talking of Grihasthas here. Although the Grihasthas experience some of these challenges, we still have to get money, apartment, and so on. That's a fact. But this is referring specifically to Grihamedas. Everyone is affectionate towards his wife and is attached to her. But what is this wife? The wife is called Stri, which means one who expands the material condition. If a person lives without a wife, his material conditions are less extensive. As soon as one marries and is connected with a wife, his material necessities increase. Pungshakshri mitunibhava metam tayomito hridaya grantisahu aho griha shetra sutapta vitaya janasimoho yang ahang mameti. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, hridaya grantis, tight knot, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. So one accumulates all this paraphernalia. It's needed. But even then, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Arjuna says, what's the use of this kingdom without my relatives? If we kill all our cousins, what's the use? Srila Prabhupada mentions why. You have wealth, you have a home, you have children. You need to show it off to someone. You need to share it with, you need to have invite people around, and they come around and you feed them and they say, oh, your children is very nice. Oh, your wallpaper, where did you buy that? Very nice. You need to share it with someone, you see. That's natural for grihasthas. They need that. So there's this whole entanglement is there. It expands and expands and expands. But what happens often, rather than creating friendship, there is enmity. There is enmity. Just like Dhritarashtra was also that example of one who is attached to his children. Actually, it's easy to tolerate one's own suffering. That is easy, relatively speaking. But as soon as one has a wife and children, it is very difficult to tolerate that suffering. And of course, your wife and children won't let you tolerate their suffering. It is difficult when you have affection. And therefore, one feels compelled, and therefore one is inclined to cheat, which is what Dhritarashtra did. He knew what was right and wrong, but he could not give up that affection for Duryodhan and his brothers. So a great example of how that affection in a materialistic person can drag one so that everything becomes destroyed. He lost everything in the end. Total annihilation of all his sons, killed one by one by Bhima, who took that vow to kill them all. There are many examples of how one will even kill one's own sons or come to enmity, it mentions here, with one's father or even one's spiritual master. There is the famous example of Aurangzeb, the tyrant Aurangzeb. I think there's a place called Aurangabad. Yeah, someone suggested we put a G in front of it. Gaurangabad. He was a tyrant, well known, infamous. He was so demoniac that he imprisoned his own father, Shah Jahan. Not only that, he killed his own sons. Particularly, I think Dara was one of his sons. He killed Dara and sent his head, no, his own brother. His brother, yeah, it was his brother. It was Aurangzeb's brother. And he sent the head to his father in prison. And the father thought, oh, here's a gift. My son has come round. He's repented. But when he opened it, Shah Jahan saw the head of my son. So demoniac. And there are many examples of how demoniac, how heartless the soul comes. That even there is affection, he's prepared to give up that family affection for his own selfish needs. So there are many examples. When His Holiness Radhanath Swami was speaking the other day, and he told us how Ram had so much affection for Sita, he told her, if you don't succumb to me in 1 year or 1 month, I forget, I will cut you into pieces and eat you. That is the love of this material world. In English, we don't have many words for love. So we will actually, in one breath, we will say, I love my hamburger, I love my wife, and I love God. Same word. Interesting. The English term love. I think in Sanskrit there are a lot more terms, actually. So we may actually conclude that because of this way that our selfishness expands, we are interested in ourselves, we then become interested in self-extended sense gratification, we may conclude that this society is to be given up. We just need to renounce everything. But Srila Prabhupada seems to suggest here something quite different. He says, those who are serious about... hold on, let me have a look. He says that this Krishna consciousness movement, he describes it as the most important movement for the upliftment of society. And I mentioned earlier, Srila Prabhupada on one lecture was saying, Krishna consciousness is not enough. There must be a Krishna conscious society. So it's not that we have to give up all the features of a society, that we simply renounce this world. There was one devotee once expressed to me his sentiment that I'd be very happy when this materialistic society blows itself up, because then they will all realize the Hare Krishna devotees were right. It's all suffering. I'm not sure whether they would realize as yet through those calamities. Simply, and nor do we wish ill on materialistic society. That is not our goal, that we wish ill on society. Rather, we're the well-wishers of society. Our job is to actually make everyone happy. Srila Prabhupada says that on many occasions. A sadhu rejoices, according to Chanakya Pandits, in another's prosperity. We want to see people. Of course, we understand how they can become happy, and we need to demonstrate that happiness. That's all. That's the difference. So there needs to be a society with all the features of a society. Everything will be there. Not that it's just a religious movement. We need to take part, Srila Prabhupada says, in all-round activities for human society. But the difference is that we have some knowledge. Srila Prabhupada mentions again, he mentions elsewhere, and I've lost that. But here it is. Unfortunately, there is no institution in human society for education on this subject. People are kept in darkness about the goal of life, and thus there is a continuous struggle for existence. He refers again to Darwin. Just listen. We speak of survival of the fittest, but no one survives. Very simple statement. So we don't want a society of monkeys. We need a society of those. We understand our own heritage. Our heritage, our ancestors are not monkeys. We have our own heritage, which is the parampara, disciplic succession. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that in chapter 2, verse 14 of the Bhagavad Gita, a great heritage brings responsibility. So this is our meditation. This is our responsibility. How can we not artificially renounce this world, but create a society which is free from enmity? And I must say that the community here in Chaupati is notable for its freedom of criticism for other people. And that, I would say, is admirable. We should actually try and spread this standard of no enmity, no criticism around the world. And then we become free from fear. We will create a society that is so wonderful to be in that others will want to join. It is no good preaching the philosophy alone. There must be that society which is so wonderful, so exemplary, that people will then ask us, what is the philosophy behind it? So I'm leaving today to Pune. I'll come back in 1 week, but just for a few hours. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all your kind hospitality. And thank you again. And I think this community is exemplary, and we should learn the lesson and try and follow your example. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. We have no time for questions, as I've gone over time. So thank you again. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.